there, and welcome to another edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dutt, editor of ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your host for the show. And we've got a big one for you today. First, we'll take you live to Logic Now's Max 2015 conference in Washington, D.C., where I catch up with General Manager Alistair Forbes about the major announcements from the event and where the company is focusing its offerings for MSPs, namely around analytics and security. Also, this summer saw the Pan Am and Para-Pan Am games take place in Toronto, and Cisco Canada and its partners played a major role in one of the biggest sporting events of the year. We'll be joined by Jeff Seifert, CTO of Cisco Canada, Roger Singh, CTO of Partner Scalar Decisions, and Bill Anderson, founder of AmpThink, to discuss the technology experience at the games, how it all went down, and what each partner learned from the experience. It's going to be a busy show, so let's get right into it for this edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. All right, we are live by way of recording, of course, by the time you hear this, at Logic Now's Max 2015 conference in Washington, D.C., where I'm joined by Alistair Forbes, GM of Logic Now. Thanks for taking the time, Alistair.
Thank you, Robert. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Let's start a little bit with looking in the rear view, perhaps. A year ago, literally, began the process that, or you announced the process that would ultimately create Logic Now. From GFI Max. Can you kind of walk us through the year that's been in terms of that transition?
Absolutely. So, as you say, literally 1 year ago at our corresponding event in Orlando, we announced the fact that we were reorganizing what was then GFI Software, which resulted in the creation of Logic Now. So the rationale behind that was that within GFI Software, we had three separate operating divisions, each of which had their own products and their own go-to-market strategies. And our determination was that the best outcome for each of those would be to operate as independent, freestanding organizations. From our perspective, as Logic Now, the key driver behind that was to allow us to focus on the product set that we have and the customers that we're serving. We are 100% cloud-based in terms of our delivery platform, so we can focus all our resources on both the development and the operations side of that to make sure that we give our customers the quality of service that they're looking for. In terms of the organization itself, many of the executive team from GFI is part of Logic Now, so we have continuity in terms of the people who are leading the business and our understanding of the market and of our customers. So we've got that level of continuity, but the increased focus allows us, we believe, to deliver more quickly for customers.
And some of those ideas that you're going to be delivering certainly took the main stage here at the conference. Wanted to delve into the two big focuses, the sort of BI/data analytics play that you guys announced, and the security play. And let's start with the first one. Can you explain? Just kind of give me the elevator pitch on Logic Cards, please.
Certainly. So Logic Cards is founded on the premise that as MSP businesses grow, the volume of data with which you have to deal grows as well. And of course, all of the data that we capture, it's in our cloud-based architecture, so it's accessible to those MSPs. They can go and interrogate the system. They can look for areas where they need to be focusing their energies. But the challenge they have is that the volume of information keeps increasing, and it becomes harder and harder for any individual to really get their arms around all of the data that's there and to pick out the most important things from what's in the data set. So Logic Cards is taking advantage of the collective intelligence that we get from all that data from 12,000 partners around the world. So we have a huge data set in terms of what's actually happening in SMB networks around the world, how MSPs are operating, what are the things that are correlated with success. And the objective was to use that collective intelligence and the data analytics techniques to feed information back to those MSPs in a way that helps them to prioritize what they're doing. So it's very much focused around helping them to improve operational efficiency, to maximize their service quality to their customers, and ultimately to drive bottom line improvements for them. One of the key things about it is that this is a system which is utilizing machine learning techniques, so it's not a generic thing that all MSPs see the same thing. It's very much driven by their individual circumstances and also how they interact with it. So we will identify what we think are important, but the way that MSPs interact with the system, actually it learns and it starts to become tailored for them. So the more they use it, the more value they get out of it.
The idea of using and tapping into some of the data that
you guys have access to as a result of managing both an individual MSP's network and an aggregate kind of the whole community's network. When that was presented, it's one of those things kind of like, wow, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And then of course the mind goes to, well, why hasn't it really been done thus far? Can you talk a little bit about kind of the process that led to this and, you know, what made it possible at this point to go this route?
So I think there's a number of things that have come together in the last few years to enable this. One of those is that we have a structural advantage in the fact that our business, our platform, has been 100% cloud-based from day one. So all of our customers are utilizing that cloud-based platform. So all the data is available to be utilized in that collective intelligence environment. So that's one thing. I think as the industry has matured, then the range of data that's available in the systems continues to increase. So that's both a positive in terms of being able to access that data, but also it's the challenge of how do you get your arms around all of that. And I think the third element is the advance in data science and the increasing accessibility of it, because it's been around for a while, but a lot of it's been the preserve of very large organizations who were the only people who had the resources to be able to implement those techniques. So we've invested over the last 18 months to put that data science capability into our own organization and deliver the benefits back to individual MSPs who, frankly, are really never going to be in a position to make that kind of investment individually. So, again, it's part of the community benefit that we have of having that large customer base that we can work with, and we can make that investment and leverage it across all of those MSPs.
Right. And you kind of touched on the main stage the future vision for it and some pretty cool stuff in moving from where we are with prescriptive analytics to potentially automating some of that and taking away some of that more mundane or more, you know, expected response kind of things that MSPs face. Can you talk a little bit about where logic cards go from here?
Absolutely. So, as you say, Logic Cards is the first real implementation of a prescriptive analytics platform in the space. So what that's doing is it's giving very targeted, very specific guidance as to these are the things that we think are important, and here's what you individually need to do about it. Over time, the intention is to develop that into, as you say, automated analytics. So not only are we identifying the specific actions that need to be taken, we can start to automate them in the background. And one of the huge differences that there is between that and what is traditionally thought of as automation in the space is traditional automation means that you have to write all the rules for the circumstances with which you want to deal. You probably have to write your own script to deal with them. So, you know, it's very much a manual task on the part of the MSP to identify the challenge, create the solution, and then deploy it through their platform. The idea behind using the analytics and the automated analytics in particular is that we can start to automate that. So in the first instance, what we probably do is to say, we recommend that this action should be taken. Once you've tried that a few times and you get comfortable that actually, yes, that is what I'm going to do when I see this every time, we can just say, all right, would you like us to automate that for you? So over time, the system builds up for itself that library of automation procedures that the MSPs can tap into, both in terms of their own environments, but again, across that whole community and the collective intelligence, so that MSPs can benefit from best practice that others are putting in place. And as you said earlier, this is all obviously on an aggregated basis, so we're not exposing anybody's intellectual property to anybody else. It's just by observation of these are the actions that are commonly taken by those MSPs that are performing best. You know, that knowledge is leveraged across the whole community.
All right, great. And there's a bit more on logic cards up on the site right now if you're interested in digging into that a bit more. Wanted to also talk about security, which has been a big focus here at the show, and something that makes a lot of sense. It's an area that obviously every managed services practice touches on, but it feels to me oftentimes like managed security as a disparate and separate practice is perhaps underrepresented in the MSP community. Is that something that you, is that an assessment that you'd agree with, or?
I think yes, I would. That obviously security is at the core of what a lot of MSPs do, but I don't think many of them, a large proportion of them, have yet got to the point of really offering a true managed security service in the way that they would have defined a generalized managed services practice, i.e. I'm going to assume the risk on behalf of my clients, I'm going to commit to a service level, I'll charge a fee for that. It's up to me how I solve that problem. So it's moving away from, I need to sell you this anti-malware product or this web filtering product or this email security product to saying, I now own the responsibility on your behalf. And I don't think many MSPs have really taken that mental leap yet to put that all together and you know, acknowledge the fact that they are effectively already assuming that risk on behalf of their clients, but they may not be codifying that well enough in terms of their agreements with their clients. So I think there's a lot of work to be done in that space. Part of it is the tool set, but also there's a huge amount of it is the go-to-market proposition around that. So how do you go to a potential client and explain the benefits of that approach and why it's better for them that you know they are now entrusting that to somebody who is a specialist in that area? I think it potentially opens up new opportunities for MSPs that do get into this. I think if you look at, there's a segment of the market where MSPs might have struggled to get traction before, which is those organizations that are a little bit larger, so they may have their own internal IT team, but they don't have a big enough team to really develop the security expertise. So I think those organizations are going to be looking for complementary solutions through service providers who have developed that expertise. So they can work in partnership with those IT teams internally, whereas they may not have been able to access that opportunity in the past. So I think there's a foot-in-the-door opportunity, if you like, for MSPs to demonstrate their value, demonstrate their worth, and to start engaging with those clients in a way that potentially opens up opportunities for them going forwards.
All right. Let's take the kind of the product-centric part of that discussion first. What are you guys doing at Logic now to help partners that want to build that tool set that you describe?
Sure. Well, the great news about this, and this is one of my colleagues is on the stage right now talking about this very point, that actually a lot of progress has been made by just using the right tools in an efficient way through a single platform to give you a consistent overview of what's happening on the network. So we talk a lot about this layered defense approach that no single security tool is adequate these days. You know, it was the case maybe 5 years ago that most people knew that they needed an anti-malware product on their endpoints. They may have had an email security solution in place, but that was kind of it. So what we've been working on over the last few years is to put in place all the layers that we think are necessary in order to be able to have that credible managed security services offering. So, you know, at every point of potential compromise, to put in place the measures to protect against that. So starting off with email security, for example, because that is still the largest single source of compromise within organizations. It seems bizarre given how long we've been using it, but it is still the case. But, you know, beyond that, effective management of software updates and patches, that has a huge impact on it as well. Looking at where are people going on the internet, drive-by downloads is a significant contributor as well. It may be introduced to the email vector. So hopefully you can stop it there. But, you know, some of that is likely to get through because it's simply a link. And, you know, if somebody's clicking on a link, they're exposed to that compromised web server. There's some payload that's on there that's going to cause compromise. So all of these different layers of protection and ultimately, you know, no solution is 100% effective. So a really robust backup strategy to go along with that. So if you look at all those different components, in our view, those are the kinds of elements you need to have in terms of the technologies to put in place. Obviously, we would say this, wouldn't we? What you need is an integrated platform to deliver all of that through a single management platform. So that's the driver that's been pushing us in the direction of focusing very much on putting all that together into the tool set and then delivering alongside that the education and the resources to help MSPs go to market with that.
Right. And the flip side of that you touched on, the go-to-market, the business model kind of structure that's necessary to do that. Are we at a point where there are kind of enough folks doing this for this kind of customer that best practices have emerged, or is this still an area where MSPs are kind of trying to find their way?
I think it is still fairly early days, and that's something that we're trying to play our part in addressing. So we've put together a program which we call the Managed Security Services Bootcamp, which we piloted earlier this year in the US, in the Baltimore area. We have another one of those coming up, and we're planning a whole series of them because you know, we think it's far more effective for an MSP to be able to apply a methodology than them all having to invent it for themselves. So really trying to encapsulate that. So there's a whole methodology behind it. There's a set of collateral to support people's sales initiatives. There's a protocol for how they go about doing their initial assessments, how they go about remediation, how they go about maintaining that level of security. So trying to wrap that all up in a way that, you know, they can take it and apply it in their own businesses, but doing so with a very strong foundation of being built on top of best practices that already exist.
Great. And there's also, dear listener, more on the security push on the site if you want to check that out. Finally, would be remiss if I didn't ask you a little bit about how things are going in the Canadian business for Logic Now. How are things going north of the border, and you know, what are you seeing in the Canadian market right now?
So I think the managed services market in Canada remains pretty robust, as it does in the rest of North America, in the US, for example. Obviously, there are differences in terms of the geography, in terms of some of the major industries. So there are different flavors of that. So Canadian MSPs, they do have to craft a proposition that's relevant to their particular circumstances. But, you know, that in itself is no different from what MSPs would be doing anywhere. So I think the market as a whole remains robust, and there's still lots of opportunity there. And, you know, we're certainly interacting with a lot of MSPs there who are seeing very solid growth in their businesses and still see lots of opportunity going forward.
All right, great. Alistair, once again, appreciate your taking the time.
Thank you very much, Robert. It's my pleasure.
Toronto was the host for the 2015 Pan Ams and Para Pan Am Games that just literally wrapped up here in the city earlier this month. And a big part of those games were Cisco Canada and a coalition of partners and allies who came together to form much of the technology backbone for the games. And here to discuss those games and the experience of those games are Jeff Seifertz, the CTO of Cisco Systems Canada, Roger Singh, CTO of Scala Decisions, and Bill Anderson, founder of AmpThink. Gentlemen, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff, perhaps best place to start off is a little bit of a rundown of your involvement in the games. And by your, of course, I mean the both Cisco and the coalition of partners that you put together to work on the technology aspect. Can you sort of give us a sense for the scale of the engagement, of the challenge that you guys faced in putting together the technology infrastructure for these games?
Absolutely. Well, to start, for those that weren't familiar with the Pan Am Games and the Para Pan Am Games, they're actually Canada's largest multi-sport event that we've ever had. We literally had almost 10,000 athletes and officials in the city of Toronto and surrounding municipalities. We had hundreds of thousands of spectators. This was more than twice the size of the Vancouver Olympics and larger, in fact, by number of sports than even the Summer Olympics, although the Summer Olympics have obviously more countries and more athletes. So very, very large undertaking. The complexity and magnitude of pulling off an event that has literally 56 venues, including two data centers, various competition venues and non-competition venues like Athletes Village and press centers and the International Broadcast Center. It was pretty overwhelming when you think about it. We literally had 18,000 LAN switch ports and network connectivity drops that we had to provide. We had over 2,000 wireless access points, and literally over that wireless infrastructure, together with our partners, we delivered wireless services to over 193,000 users and over 2.87 million minutes of free Wi-Fi and 101 terabits of traffic. So very substantial. When we think about what it takes to pull off a games like this, when it's the Summer Olympics, there's really big sponsorship dollars. And when you look at the IT budget of a London Olympics, just for IT, there was about $1 billion budget. Mm-hmm. Rio will be $1.2 billion. Yet for the Toronto Games, we had to get very creative and deliver IT amongst the organizing committee and the sponsors for literally only $77 million. And so when we looked at that challenge, and we signed on 3 years ago at Cisco in Toronto, 2015 to help build that coalition you referred to, we really wanted to find kind of our leading partners that could not only deliver technology, but bring really creative ideas on how to deliver, how to protect, and the network, the users, how to make sure that we have that amazing connectivity and experience for the spectators and the athletes visiting. And that's why two of our partners here, great partners, Scalar Decisions and AmpThink, would be happy to share some of the perspectives they have in terms of the unique things around wireless and around security and data center.
Sure. Roger and Bill, if I could ask you to maybe each jump in for a second and kind of give the elevator pitch for your companies for those who may not be familiar. I think you're pretty familiar names, but probably good to clarify for those who might need it. And just tell us a little bit about the role that you guys played in the Pan Ams.
Absolutely.
Roger, you want to go first?
I will go first. Thank you. So a little bit on Scalar Decisions. We are a Canadian IT systems integrator, offices in Toronto, Vancouver, Calgary, Ottawa, Montreal, and London, Ontario. Started in 2004, focused specifically on data center and enterprise IT infrastructure, security, and cloud systems. For Pan American Games, we were an official supplier working with Cisco, as Jeff mentioned earlier, and a number of other partners. Our role in it was as the IT security supplier, data center services. So we actually operated the and provided the secondary data center for the core infrastructure of the games and provided storage systems behind it as well. When we looked at the games, we saw a great opportunity to showcase our talent and showcase our wonderful city of Toronto.
So, AmpThink, we're very much a specialty company. We specialize in the delivery of complicated wireless networks in difficult environments. We started in 2011. We're a newer company, but we've done some pretty cool projects in that time. We've done three Super Bowls in partnership with Cisco. We're involved in a number of Major League Baseball parks, including we did the work for the Toronto Blue Jays at the Rogers Center, and in a bunch of arena business. For us, the Pan Am Games was a great opportunity to work in what is a little bit different sporting environment. It was a more temporary build in addition to some of the permanent builds we were doing. So it gave us the opportunity to look at unique strategies to take what we do traditionally from a high-density deployment perspective and apply those to environments where we knew that we wouldn't have the same assets long-term, and we need to come up with strategies to get that done. It's a great opportunity for us to also work more in Canada. We opened a Canadian division 2 years ago, and that was when we approached Jeff for an opportunity to find some ways to work together. And so the Pan Am Games has been a great way for us to invest in Canada and to help us build our staffing up there to support some of the customers we have.
Right on. That's a pretty big introduction, to be sure.
Sure, absolutely.
Jeff, you touched on some of the innovation in model and approach that was needed because of the budget constraints of an event like the Pan Ams. In terms of features, functionality, and what IT brought to the table at these games, what kind of innovations were you guys focused on in delivering the experience to ultimately your end users, both the athletes and the teams and the folks in the arenas?
Absolutely. One of the wonderful things about the Pan Am Games, a little bit different than the Olympics, is that we can not only have the operational stability, but it allowed us the flexibility to start with some innovative concepts you might not do in Olympics. So one of the things that we did, in addition to providing free Wi-Fi across to all the spectators, which is something that has not been done on major games before, is we put various technologies out at venues. So we put out interactive kiosk technology that allowed spectators to come up and take pictures and email them to friends and family, and it added to the excitement. In fact, we had over 83,372 photos emailed off during the game. That's a fairly phenomenal number when you think about how many people attended the games. We also were able to use technology like telepresence to actually link up the doctors in the venues with the doctors at the Polyclinic Hospital and the Athletes Village, and to actually improve health healthcare services to the athletes. So if they needed to speak to an orthopedic surgeon, it was one video call away, as an example. And then we did some really fun creative thing. We had a set of volunteers that had specialized skills. They were very multilingual. They could speak Brazilian Portuguese or Spanish or Cantonese. And they were on the other end of a telepresence talking to spectators, answering questions, giving them tips and advice, looking up scores to the fans out in the venue. So that was a lot of fun. And we've been involved in other games before where we absolutely focused on the operational stability, delivering IT services. But to be able to turn on that much Wi-Fi together with AmpThink and with our other partners to be able to do that much kind of creativity in terms of video was fantastic.
Very cool. And those kiosks kind of became a calling card. You certainly saw them at the various events here in Toronto. But even if you weren't going to the Pan Am Games, there were quite a few locations at places like Toronto Pearson Airport where those were pretty high profile and probably drew some significant attention both for the games and for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things we really want to do is there's a lot of digital signage out there, but we really want to talk about it's about customer interaction and how do you engage with the customers and how do you show, as various partners, how do you show your customers what they can do with their end users to engage them? And so we did a great job of with our partners of giving some ideas to our collective customers, and we think there's lots of business opportunities out of that.
All right, perfect. I want to get some thoughts from each of you on kind of your experience from the games and maybe what you think you learned as an organization from your participation.
Absolutely, I'll go first on that one. The games itself was actually a great exercise for a systems integrator like ourselves to showcase our ability to deliver under very tight timelines and integrate with a number of partners. And in fact, if we take a look at the infrastructure that supported this game, Jeff talked about the venues, but if we looked at the services that were provided, they were not only provided from within data centers, we actually utilized a lot of cloud technologies, and we also utilized a lot of connectivity across a number of partner landscapes. So if you look at this from a very macro level, it looks like any sort of really large enterprise customer, with the exception of this is an infrastructure that we're building for a set period of time, and it will be gone after that set period of time. So that necessitated tight timelines and very fixed timelines. We talked about some of the pressure that was put on by the budget. So we had to be very creative on how we sourced and put our people in to deliver those services. So we are able to use this as I mentioned before, as a very good use case on integrating security, looking at user interaction, providing services across public cloud, data center infrastructure, and distributing and monitoring systems that go all across Ontario.
All right, great.
I think for us, it was just another opportunity to figure out how we can get more people attached to Wi-Fi, and I think that Jeff's already alluded to some of the numbers. But you know, it's really that's the really compelling challenge with Wi-Fi. It's an unlicensed spectrum, and there's not a lot of control over it. And what we get to do when we get to put together a program like this is to attach that to lots and lots of people. And so I'll, you know, just reference the closing ceremonies was really neat for us because it was the strongest performance we had in that building. We've been in there about a year. We had almost 10,000 people connected concurrently to the Wi-Fi network, and they moved 1.9 terabytes worth of data, which is on par with some of the events that you've probably seen referenced in the trade presses, like Super Bowls and All-Star Games and so on. So the ability to get that many people on and learn about what they're doing is really compelling.
The whole inversion thing is pretty interesting, Bill. Maybe you can talk for a second about that concept.
I'm sorry, which was it, Jeff?
Inversion.
Traffic inversion? Absolutely. So that's a concept we really like. So we talk about inversion where actually the upload and download stream flip. So when we started first with high-density Wi-Fi a number of years ago, the bulk of the traffic is people downloading stuff. But what we're finding now is that people, fans, are becoming content creators. They've got this pocket device. It's a camera, and it's maybe a video recorder, and they're flipping it around. And instead of consuming data, they're actually producing data in a very compelling way. And what we saw both in the opening ceremonies and the closing ceremonies were moments during those events where the uploads start to exceed the downloads. And that's a moment where we know the fans are really excited to be there. They're trying to get engaged with the people that are around them. They want to share it with their family. We also call it an ego moment, right? It's, I'm here, I want to show you that I'm here. And what's really nice is that with Wi-Fi, we can take and characterize some of this social behavior, and we can start to understand more about fans. And that can help us learn what's really compelling to a fan, and we can help them get back into the stadiums. And you know, because of the television, we're seeing declining attendance to live events. And so if we can use services to learn more about what's compelling, and we can create services that make people want to be there, that's a lot of fun. And we're really excited when we can be part of that, because there's a really great shared human experience. And I think, you know, the Pan Am Games is all about that shared human experience. And when you can use a technology, Wi-Fi or a kiosk or whatever it is, to take and improve that social experience and get more people engaged, that's very satisfying.
One of the things that I think was really exciting for us is to see this coalition of partners come together. So we have Scalar and AmpThink here, but there are other partners like Allstream, Beanfield Metro Connect, Atos, Gold Medal Systems, really a whole collection of partners. And everybody kind of worked as one team. It was kind of, you put your company hat aside, and everybody was focused on delivering the best games for those athletes and spectators, and that was really exciting. But even with all those partners, a really big factor and difference because of the budget was they were not able to hire the number of people they normally. So it was a huge contingent of volunteers. In fact, over 23,000 volunteers. But a little closer to our heart was the fact we needed technology people in every venue to support, whether it be the press, the spectators, the athletes, just the back office operations. And so we started, when we looked at this as a business problem 3 years ago, we saw a great opportunity to actually create experience for the students that are in many colleges, universities, and high schools taking technology as a curriculum. We have a thing called Cisco Networking Academy. So we literally had over 250 students working as teams, not just individuals, mentored by their instructor who took their summer holidays and decided to help out at Pan Am instead, alongside with the various engineers from AmpThink, Scalar, and Cisco, and others, actually deliver the technology in the game. So they built out the venues. They helped operate, make sure as troubles popped up, and there weren't too many, but as things did pop up, the students were there, hands-on, helping resolve things, dealing with difficult members of the user community. Sometimes the press members can be a little demanding. You're not, Robert, I know, ever that way. But they had an amazing experience, and they take that with them. And that kind of experience is very difficult to get in a summer job. But these students did this for no money as volunteers. So big focus was, how do we actually help all our different partners and the entire channel, as well as the end customers, with a steady supply of new talent that can come in, and not just trained, but with experience.
And that might be in the long run the one of the biggest legacies for Cisco and the channel community from these games.
Yeah, in fact, next month they're going to be holding a bit of a job fair with a lot of the partners. Of course, we want to give first dibs to Scalar and AmpThink and the other partners, but there is a lot of opportunity. A lot of them actually have already graduated, and they're not 18, 19-year-olds. A lot of them are in the second career. They're recent immigrants, tremendous work ethic, and we're going to help provide some of those linkages because many of them really outdid themselves in this event and proved that they could definitely walk into a customer situation and execute on a deployment.
Very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd second that statement. The students and volunteers did a fantastic job, and we have benefited. We actually have hired a few of the volunteers already into our operations team. You know, in another thing that's pretty interesting, we talked to Brian Cook, mentioned today, he was talking to our team, and he said the most fascinating thing about the games is that nobody knew we were there because everything went so smoothly. And that to me is a great testament of the not only us but all of the other partners in this ecosystem from a delivery perspective. But more important to us, and as the cybersecurity eyes on this as well too, We were very thankful that we had no looming breaches or spread of malware within and attacks within the system. Mm-hmm. We actually did have some the evidence that the sites and internal systems were being attacked. But we were able to fend that off, and everything went smoothly through that exercise.
Sure. Oh, they were there. the Scala guys did a fantastic job keeping them at bay. But they were there for sure.
Excellent. I think they're. I think it's safe to say they're everywhere at this point. Unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not just looking from the outside of the network too. It's watching the people that are hopping on, literally with hundreds of thousands of people walking in, being able to connect on Wi-Fi. It's a bit of a challenge to them, and so you do need your absolute top partners, the best in security, that can kind of work side by side with partners to kind of stay ahead of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the closing games for the Parapanams, which followed the Panams, are now over, and not to get all what have you done for me lately with you guys, but it was almost inevitable that as these games unfolded and it became clear that they were going to be pretty much by any measure a success, talk of course in the media here in Toronto turned to this is the run-up for another Olympic bid. We got to do this. We've shown we can do this. Are you guys on board for doing this again for an Olympic Games scale the next time?
Well, I can comment that we're already full heads down on Rio, and we're going to be part of the Rio Olympics being a global organization, and we're absolutely helping, and our partners are going to be helping as well in terms of some of that knowledge transfer. If and when Toronto someday, because it's probably more about when as opposed to if, we'll all collectively want to be there. It's something that you can be really proud of. It's something not only as companies we can be proud of, but it's really motivating for your employees to be part of something like this. It's something they'll tell their grandchildren about. And there's so many great legacy opportunities that come out of this. The technology is going to be donated to so many worthwhile causes, the students that came out of that. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
Perfect. All right, gentlemen, thanks for taking the time. It's been a fascinating chat about the experience, the Pan Ams, and congrats to you all for the role you played in what was a fairly well-heralded event.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's about all the time we have for this edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'd like to thank our guests, Alistair Forbes, Jeff Seifert, Roger Singh, and Bill Anderson for joining us, and thank our sponsors, including, of course, Cisco Canada, from whom we heard today, for their continuing support of the site, and, of course, thank you, the listener, for joining us today, because there wouldn't be much of a show without you. Hey, we'll be back real soon with another edition of the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast, and next time, we'll feature Avnet Technology Solutions' Cheryl Neal and Alex Hoff of Audic Networks, so be sure to be on the lookout for that. But until then, I'm Robert Dutt for ChannelBuzz.ca, and I'll see you around the channel.